This is May 27th, 1960. A program for Thomas Hart Benton and the mural.
A very cordial welcome to all of you from the Kansas City chapter of the American Institute of Architects. We're tremendously pleased that, first of all, we've had the opportunity to have an event of this sort, and we're tremendously pleased as well that you've all come. I should like to acknowledge, if I may, the presence of Governor and Mrs. George Docking of the state of Kansas, who came quite a long way to pay tribute to Mr. Benton. Governor, would you stand? Former President Mrs. Truman had intended to be present this evening, and as you probably all know, a death in Mrs. Truman's family has made this impossible. Now, our program is to be tremendously brief and our speeches practically non-existent. The whole purpose of this is to allow all of you the opportunity to congratulate Mr. Benton personally and to see this latest work of his. So I'll introduce, if I may, our own chapter member, who is also the chairman of the National Committee of the American Institute of Architects on Awards and Scholarships, Mr. Mackey.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the highest honor within the power of the Institute to bestow in the fine arts, other than architecture, is the Fine Arts Medal. With its award, our guest of honor, Thomas Hart Benton, joins a distinguished company, including such artists as Paul Manship, John Singer Sargent, Diego Rivera, Leopold Stokowski, Carl Millis, and Ivan Mestrovich. The best way I know of to introduce Tom Benton is to read the citation which accompanied his award at the recent AIA convention in San Francisco, and I quote, "The American Institute of Architects, in awarding its Fine Arts Medal, recognizes and salutes Thomas Hart Benton, painter. You have struggled long and valiantly against humanity's reluctance to be represented as it is, rather than as it would like to appear. The facts, sometimes grim, sometimes merely salty, reveal true personality, whether it be of a person, a city, or a state. There are signs such as the realism of our contemporary literature, or the popularity of close-up portraits, that we are beginning to prefer truth to false pride. If so, the change is due in no small measure to your painting." End of quote. Before I turn the mic over to Tom Benton, I want to ask his greatest booster and possibly his most severe critic to take a bow, the charming Rita Benton. Come on.
Okay, Tom. Now it's my turn. After we got rid of the boss. Well, I tell you, folks, we're going to make this brief. Because, you see what I got hanging on me here? This is what the Kansas City chapter gave to me, and it is the Kansas City chapter that really gave it to me. So I'm among friends here. This is unusual for me. When I get on a platform generally to make a talk, I figure that I'm in a defensive position. This is the first time in my life that I have ever faced an audience, big or little, that I didn't feel in the position where I felt that I had to defend myself. I don't feel like that now, and my habits are so strong, defensively strong, that I don't know what the hell to say. What can I say? Well, hurry up, says my wife, and say what you got to say. I have nothing to say. What I have to say is the work that's out there. Apparently, I don't have to defend it anymore. They give me a medal for it. Now, And that's the whole story of this. My life has been spent with controversies of various sorts, in which I'm always defending the work. As a matter of fact, a fellow came in to me the other day, international collector that I've known for some time. And he said a strange thing to me. He says, "How does it feel to be alone?" Meaning that I'd repudiated the world of modern art. Well, I said, "I don't feel alone at all. I just got a medal. It's just a lot of people with me." And that's the way it is. Now, I'll talk. Yes. But I don't know what to talk about. If you got any questions, I'll answer those. If you haven't any, we go out and look at the work for which I got the medal. I'm not running for office anymore. The office I already run and finished with it, as my predecessor on this platform has also done. So what shall I do? Here's this crowd out here, not too big a crowd, but at least it's that many who are my friends. And I am willing to talk. If you tell me what I should talk about, you're all agreed that what I did is all right. So I don't have to fight about that anymore. What'd you say, Arthur? Oh, everybody knows. We don't want to bore them to death with a lot of technical talk. One of the great curses of modern art, that the techniques by which you proceed have been made the main purpose. It's not the public's business how I proceed. The idea is what I do and what kind of meanings they get out of when I've finished. The aesthetics of this thing, no, it's not the aesthetics, you make your own aesthetics. But the procedures, which have been made so much of in the last 50 years, are not of very much consequence. We who are in the business of making these things know how to make them. I might say, however, along the long gentry's year, that the architects do have a way of making extremely difficult spaces for painters to paint in. Of course, that's been going on from time immemorial, because it wasn't only Frank Lloyd Wright that wanted to get rid of painters. Most architects have wanted to get rid of them, and because they are disturbing to an architect's general ideas of what a building should look like. He's got his building all finished and it's perfect, and along comes a painter and destroys it. And of course, Lon's gone along with me. He didn't mind that wall being destroyed. I don't know why, but he hasn't objected to it. He's here. That's been my main problem with this kind of mural that I've painted out there. It does break the wall up, but after the wall's broken up, what's the difference? Looks good, makes the room look bigger. What can we talk about, Arthur? In techniques. You know, I'm against this idea that's been going on for the last, almost 50 years, in making the procedures by which artists operate, trying to make them publicly valuable. I don't think you can do it. That's a specialist's job. And the fact that green acts against one kind of red, different from another kind of red, is nobody's business except the artist who's trying to make effects with it. And I do that all the time, as all of the rest of us who are in the trade of making pictures. But I don't make any special virtue out of knowing how to make red look different with one green and another green. That's part of the trade. I think I know what you mean, in a way. And I also know what the fellow that I spoke about a few months ago, when he said to me, "What do you feel about, how do you feel by being so alone?" Because I repudiated all of the aesthetics of my century, that I thought they were of no consequence. Not completely inconsequential, but not of sufficient consequence. I've always had an idea that the painter should communicate ideas, and they have also been aware of the fact that he can't communicate ideas which are not already shared by a public. So my art has been devoted to trying to bring out American ideas for an American public. Now, it's a little more complicated than that because there are techniques involved in this kind of thing. The mural that you see out there is one of these things which most architects of my time have very much disliked, one which breaks the surface of the wall and makes recessions and projections on the wall. Well, it's quite a complicated sort of a technique to do those kind of things. But again, that's not the public's business, the technique. All I want you to get is it looks like real. I get a great satisfaction of seeing some son of a bitch come in the room there and say, Jesus Christ, they're going to walk off the wall. Well, I like that kind of criticism better than I do a highly specialized criticism that tries to say why they appear to walk off the wall. Because most people who try to do that, they can't put it in words anyhow, just make nonsense out of it. That's a highly tricky piece of business, and I don't know how to explain it in words. In fact, you can't. It's explained in the actual, what we call the accomplished fact. The fait accompli. If you could explain that thing in words, there wouldn't be no use in painting it. All right, that's the answer to one question, such an answer as it is. Okay, here's Lon. Now here's the guy who's responsible for the building. Now, Mr. Gentry has just said that few people realize how much research, I think we're assuming your historical research, has to go into a mural before you start painting it. Well, that would depend upon the amount of historical knowledge that your patron has, very largely. If he hasn't got any, you can fake it. In this particular case, I had to be a writer and a patron, or I think you all know the patron, who doesn't keep his mouth shut at all. So you have to be pretty well right. But generally speaking, when I've gone into these things, and I am an historical painter in the mid-19th century sense, like Delacroix and the French historical painters, I try to be as accurate as I can. I do the research, and I enjoy it. There's a certain kind of fun in digging into these things. And there's fun in painting a big thing like this. The organization of the thing is not easy. Just the physical properties of putting these things, say, as a bunch of cubes and cylinders and cones in the right place in that space. I have to take these, what I have discovered in history, and somehow place it in space. Now, I have by no means in this mural out here covered the history of independence. I've selected what seemed to me salient facts which could be represented. And I've arranged them geometrically so that you get a sense of those happenings occurring in an actual space, or a representation of an actual space. All this is very tricky. Matter of fact, Lon, the studying of the history of this I did in about 3 weeks. The organization of the damn thing took some 18 months after I got the facts. And that organization, it must either show itself in the thing itself or it don't exist. It exists only in the mind of the artist. And I don't think the mind of the artist is too much importance. I've seen too many of them, and most of them haven't got any minds. And I sometimes doubt whether I have any myself, except that I have learned certain tricks of the trade over years. I've learned how to do things. For instance, in studying history, I know who the experts are, and when I need information, I go to them. I don't try to do it all myself, and that's part of the procedures I think we all use in performing in any kind of a public scene. You can't depend on your own experience alone because your experience is never wide enough. You can't depend on your own reading alone. because you wouldn't have time in your life to do enough of it. You have to go find those guys who have done it, and they tell you what to read, which is crucial. Sometimes they're wrong. And they all disagree with one another, so you do have to make a sort of a... You do have to finally select what is real for you, what really represents history. And that's where your judgment, where you finally become a communicative artist, is knowing what to pick that means something to the public in general. Now, who asked that question? It was Lon Gentry. Is that any answer to it? I'll elaborate if necessary. Because, you know, after drinking Don Davis's wines and his whiskey beforehand, you have to have a little stimulation to be able to think. I might say, while I'm still here on the platform, I'm highly flattered that our neighboring Governor Docking of Kansas, has come here. I would like to give him more enlightening talk, but I don't know how. As I say, I'm not on the defensive now, so I'm not really stirred. Well, no. Nobody does these things for free, but you might say I did, because I gave half of it to Uncle Sam anyhow. So, I did it because I wanted to, not because I needed money. You know that, Jerome. There's easier way to make money than painting a mural like this. Thousands of easier ways. And I know some of them. But I like to do this. I would like to see, all right, now that brings up a question. I would like to see the artist, guys like myself, back in public life. We've been shut out of it for two centuries. These jobs don't come very often to the artist. In fact, they don't ever come, except for lucky guys like me. The consequence is the artist, somewhere or other, he's a useless guy in society. What does he do? He retires into himself. And he does what other guy does, whom society forces into retirement. He makes a life of his own. That it's a peculiar life is not the fault of the artist. All this not art around here is made by society and not by the artist. And if society has use for the artist, surely he'll produce social goods. And I have, in my own life, I feel that I'm very lucky that I've had enough harmony, or let's say, I don't know if it's harmony or not, but I've had enough chances to face the American people, to communicate with them. I've been luckier than most of others. This is very hard to say. Now, I want to say it this way. Most of my murals, I say, I have had to be considerably on the defensive after I got through with them. That seems to make no difference. As long as the art arouses interest, whether those are antagonistic or not, it's publicly effective. And that's, I felt like that at least I'm one artist in my time, and that includes one of our other friends, Diego Rivera, who lived a public life as an artist. And frankly, that's one of the best lives you can live on earth, because you do eat, you have a lot of fun, and you finally get medals. Shall we let it go at this? Go see the mirror.
Esteem in which you're held by the architects of all the country is evidenced by the medal, and in a very small but a somewhat more intimate way, this esteem on the part of your neighbors, your Kansas City architects, and a few of your friends is evidenced here tonight. And our whole purpose of coming here was simply to say to you, congratulations on a most richly deserved honor.
Thank you, Aaron.
And thank you. Although I realize it's probably quite unnecessary, for any of you who may not know, one of the architects of this building, a member of our chapter, is here. His partner was not able to be here. Might I introduce Mr. Alonzo Gentry of the firm of Gentry and Voskamp? Alon, would you stand? And one more very brief thing. The chapter is tremendously indebted to President Truman, although he was not able to come, to Dr. Brooks, the director of the Library and Museum, and to his two assistants, Mr. Lagerquist and Mr. Perry, who have been tremendously helpful and very kind in giving us the free run of the facilities here. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the program we're to have. We have some coffee. We'll now turn the lights on so you can see the mural in all of its glory, and we hope you feel free to stay and to talk with Tom and to offer your comments on what he's done. Thank you very much.